You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where Tom Brady is the greatest human being to ever walk the planet Earth. That's right, Drew. Did you get a count on that, on how many seconds that is? You know what? I only have one thing to say. Fuck this. I had this whole opening written out that I was going to read. It was all about a post I made on Facebook and people overreacting to it. But fuck this. I don't care. I can't deal with this anymore. The suspension of Tom Brady was handed down literally minutes before we started recording this podcast. I made one brief phone call to my father where he ranted. We joked around a little bit, and I was a little somber in a little of our pre-show here. So you guys are really getting raw JML today. This is all going to be my raw reactions to this. These are the reactions that usually Daniel gets and my father gets about what happens with the Patriots and with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. But you will all be getting those. Because you know what? I don't give a shit anymore. It's a joke. You want to talk about witnessing the farce? You are all witnessing it right now. Remember when we tore apart Deflategate? Can you believe it's still fucking going? That's right, it's still going. Joining me this week in witnessing the farce of all farces from the capital of our nation. I don't even remember intros this week. I can't even remember them. Via Skype or some shit or other or some other futuristic technology. Maybe it's Ultron. Maybe it's Tony Stark's fault. Daniel T. Richards. Hey, Dan, what's up? I told you in pre-show, it's gonna be a shit show. It's a shit show this week, alright?
Well, I'm coming from the land not so much of deflated balls, but of inflated egos, so I understand your pain, and I'm here for you.
Yeah,
Roger talking to Tom, Goodell, I'm talking to Tom Brady, of course, not you.
Oh, fuck you. Tom Brady, look, okay? Tom Brady doesn't need our sympathy, because you know what he's going to do for those 4 weeks where he's not
No,
allowed?
This is my joke! No, you can't just my joke for the news. Don't say it. Don't say it.
Fine. It's the obvious joke to make, though. But...
Do the thing with House of Mouse.
Also joining us via Skype from the House of Mouse... The worshiper of Rob Gronkowski, who better get used to the fact that they're going to do this to Gronk soon, Elliot Rivera. What's up, Elliot?
I would just like to take this moment to say publicly to Mr. Gronkowski, if your balls need to be deflated, sir, I am here for you. Just let me know. Call me. Seriously, just call me. I will deflate your balls.
I want to make a point to you, Elliot. So when we saw the story about the little girl and trying to kill her mother or threatening to kill her mother over the cell phone, you said that there was no more farce to witness. Are you willing to take that back at this moment?
This is definitely a bigger farce than the girl trying to kill her mom over the iPhone.
Thank you.
iPhone.
All right. No, I'm satisfied. We can end the episode.
Recording. No, but
I hope you learned something this week.
Hold on. It doesn't mean it's the biggest one ever. We still got the ISIS dudes playing gay, trying to seduce gay people. I mean, if there could be more coming.
This is the point, Elliot. There will always be more coming. This is getting worse and worse, all right?
But it feels like it makes the midside stronger. It doesn't break. You know, it makes us stronger, and it gives us the will to move on.
If you strike us down, we shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
So you're saying, wait, basically you're saying we're Hydra. You cut off one head and two more grows
back. Two more still grow, yes. Or Snydra.
Yeah, we're Snydra. All hail Snydra. It's time for the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Tom Brady gets to spend 4 more weeks banging his wife this season. As the NFL has suspended him for supposedly deflating footballs in violation of some terribly dumb rules, NFL MVP Tom Brady is going to cost his team also $1 million, which they fine the Patriots, and two draft picks, one first round next year and a fourth round the year after that.
A fourth round. I don't even understand that. Why is it 1 year the first round and then the next year fourth? Like, is that just because they're like, you know what? Belichick tends to get really good players in the fourth round, so we better take that one away from him too. Is that their logic there?
Key mistake you made. You used the word logic. I believe Roger Goodell cut off a chicken's head, put it on a spinning wheel, and played a kazoo, and watched where the chicken fell, and that's how he chose this penalty.
No, he brought in the Family Guy writers. It was manatees, and he just gave them beach balls.
Yeah, basically just about any other punishment would have made sense other than this. But so here's the thing about all this. We planned on doing a big segment on why the Wells report, which was the so-called independent investigation into Deflategate.
The Well I'm a Moron report.
Yes, thank you. Oh, the humor is just tanking.
I'm not being humorous. I told you, shit show.
We're going to do a little bit of investigation into why it wasn't quite as clear cut. And one of the things we wanted to talk about specifically is the burden of proof that the NFL uses. Because Tom Brady, by the way, in this Wells report, if you haven't been following it, was not found guilty of deflating footballs. He was found to be more probably than not aware.
Generally aware. Generally aware.
That deflating footballs was going on. Which is the most legalese, lawyerish talk you could possibly think of. And because the NFL uses a standard of burden that's more like a civil court, where 51% means guilty, than a criminal court, which is beyond a reasonable doubt, the NFL has said, well, then Tom Brady is in fact guilty. Is that fair? Elliot?
Out of my mind. I was saying before the show, like, I don't understand how you can be suspended over something that you allegedly probably generally were aware of. It just doesn't make sense to me. You know, and then of course I forget this isn't a legal proceeding. It's I guess one of those sports voodoo things that you guys know more about than I do. But I mean, look, it's just,
you know, the same amount I do, Elliot, which is nothing. All right. We know nothing about this because it doesn't make any sense.
It's weird. It's awful, to put it honestly. I'm not even that much of a sports guy, but even I feel like this is just a travesty.
Can I answer the question of whether it's fair or not?
Well, sure. I guess it's your show.
Yeah, it's not fair. You want to know why it's not fair? Because there is no evidence internal to that report that points to Tom Brady doing anything. There is no reason for them to jump from that lack of evidence to more probable than not. And that proves that they have a suppressed premise that they are not expressing. And the suppressed premise that they're not expressing that makes it more probable than not is that there's no way that anyone can be that talented and successful without having cheated. And that's the premise they're operating under. Because if you look at all of it, look, there's two ways to approach the data set, right? You can look at it with two different veils, right? There are different ways you're looking at it, two different screens that you're looking at it from. You look at all the data and you say, oh, that's a bunch of random occurrences that has nothing linking it together besides the fact that that's the way people interact. Or you can look at it and say, oh, wow, that means there's some sort of wrongdoing here. There's some sort of malevolence. But the only reason to assume the former is if you're assuming malevolence happens. If you look at the text message between the two guys, do you assume they're dumb people who are incompetent at their jobs and don't want Tom Brady mad at them and like the fact that they're friends with Tom Brady and Tom Brady gives them shit? Or do you assume that they're part of some nefarious plot? Those are the only two ways to look at them. When you look at the fact that Tom Brady didn't hand over his cell phone, his communication, did Tom Brady not want to give people who are against him further reason to incriminate him? And he also didn't want to hand over personal data, such as the dick pictures of his massive penis that he sends to his wife? Or was he hiding a cover-up? Even though all the text messages to the two other people supposedly involved would have already been on the phones that they got from those two guys. When you look at the science, is it explained by the fact that the head official, Walt Anderson, told you things that told you about the gauge and how it was imprecise? Or does Walt Anderson not remember correctly? The number of logical leaps that you have to make to get to more probable than not involves willfully, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, embracing the premise of malevolence on someone, on everyone's part. This is the way they have to look at everyone. Ted Wells has to look at everyone and think they're a malevolent person, which shows that ultimately he is a malevolent person. And that is the bottom line. That is the only way you can look at this.
But Justin, oh, good rant, by the way. But Justin, don't the Patriots have a history of cheating?
Didn't Belichick cover this? I thought we covered this already. Yes, the Patriots have a history of cheating out in front of 85 fucking thousand people, right? It's the same goddamn thing. This is how smart Belichick was. This is how much of a genius Belichick is, and they don't even realize this. Belichick got out ahead of this months ago when he just says to them, very sardonically, he says to the media, yeah, we cheated in front of 85,000 people. Oops, we're so fucking dumb. So you can either assume they're good people and they did it without realizing they were doing it and it was an honest mistake, or you can assume they're malevolent and retarded. It's the same thing. It's the same thing here. So either Tom Brady's a good person and he was... Honestly, he just wanted the balls down to 12.5, and the ball boys were complaining because the refs put it up too high, and that pissed Tom off, and Tom yelled at them, and you know what? Nobody likes to get yelled at. Or Tom Brady is so fucking malevolent that he cheats over something so insignificant that it doesn't affect anything.
Yeah, there are a lot of things going on here, not the least of which is the assumptions of the Wells report and the people doing the investigating. But also, if Tom Brady is guilty, and I don't think that from the Wells report, even if you assume he is, it's more likely than not he is guilty, that doesn't mean he is guilty.
The only way I will believe Tom Brady is guilty is if he fucking comes out tomorrow and says, I did it. I'm sorry. I should have come clean earlier. I was too embarrassed. I was too ashamed. I didn't want to look bad in front of everyone, but the secret's out. The only way I can be clean with myself anymore is that I did it. If he, in whatever unlikely world, whatever world Jerry O'Connell and his sliders team goes to, he says that, I will believe that he did that. But I guess his lawyer just came out. My dad was saying his lawyer came out and denied it again. So as long as Tom Brady's lawyer comes out and vehemently denies it, and Tom Brady just continues to ignore it because he knows it's retarded and he's using the Belichick-Snyder method with the media, I am never going to believe he did it. You cannot convince me he did it. I have not seen enough evidence.
I agree with you. I'm assuming for the point of...
No, this is how fucking retarded this is. I will not even allow that assumption to stand.
Okay, well, a hypothetical quarterback is found legitimately guilty.
Okay, fine, I accept
deflating
that.
Footballs. Thank you. Let's call him Bomb Trady. Bomb is found
how about,
guilty.
No, how about we call him Aaron Rodgers? How about we call him, what was the guy on the Bucs who paid all that money to have the footballs deflated for the Super Bowl?
Right. Yeah. No name guy.
Why don't we just call him that Super Bowl champion who nothing's happened with that? Brad Johnson. Wasn't it Brad Johnson?
Yeah, or Jerry Rice or.
Yeah, why don't we call him Jerry Rice?
Any number of other people.
Yeah.
Let's assume Baum is found guilty and or admits it. And then it is legitimately, you can call it by any definition, cheating. It is cheating. It was a subversion of the rules.
Just as much as anyone who pretends to make a catch that they didn't make is cheating.
Yes, exactly. You see where I'm going here. We recognize in America that there's a difference between levels of murder. That you have a degree of ending someone's life. And there are degrees of cheating. Okay, Spygate, in terms of degrees of cheating, is the stupidest degree of cheating you could possibly think of.
And this is dumber than Spygate!
And this is worse than that in terms of degrees of cheating. Spygate, so for instance, one thing I learned about Spygate this week that I'm a Patriots fan, I investigated Spygate, and I still didn't know this because it's so wildly underreported, is that you are, in fact, 100% allowed, even to this day, to videotape signals. You just can't do it from on the field.
Right, because they don't want you to turn around and show the iPad to the coaches and the players.
You can do it from, what is it, about 100 feet above you in the skybox? That's allowed, 100%. But you just can't do it on the field. So I didn't even know that. So in terms of advantage that you get from doing that, virtually nothing. And in terms of the advantage someone gets.
And that was, by the way, when Belichick said he misinterpreted it, that's what he misinterpreted. Because somebody sent him a memo that said, you can't do it from the sidelines, and that was different from what the league rule was written as. So he just ignored the memo because he thought that only the competition committee could make rules. So he literally did just misinterpret the memo.
Right. Meanwhile, getting no discernible advantage from doing so.
Right, and meanwhile, everyone said he was lying by using the term, I misinterpreted the memo, because, you know, everyone thinks everyone lies the way Bill Clinton does.
Yeah, did not have sexual relations with that deflated.
It depends on what your definition of deflated is.
Yeah. So, again, the advantage one gets from cheating by slightly deflating a football is so minuscule that it amounts to basically nothing. And in fact, the argument that I see people making is not that Tom, like, not that this affected really in any way any of the games that Tom Brady won, aside from the fact that he got a psychological advantage over the team by having the balls prepared the way he wanted them prepared.
What I don't understand, and now you guys can help me out with this if you, my understanding was that they caught that the balls were deflated, they reinflated them, and then proceeded to play the Super Bowl, proceeded to play the game. Am I correct in that?
It wasn't even in the Super Bowl. I want to be clear about this, all right? This happened in the AFC Championship game, which they won by running the fucking football, by the way. And then in the Super Bowl, all the balls were perfectly inflated, and he did a 14-point comeback in the air over what was considered one of the best secondaries in the history, one of the best defenses in the history of the sport.
Well, that's what I don't understand. He still won the game. So even after the balls were reinflated and everything was, they still won.
This goes back to the suppressed premise, Elliot. The suppressed premise is that Tom Brady has been doing this for years. That is what they are trying to do. This is not about the Super Bowl. This is not about one game. This is not about deflated footballs. This is about systematically destroying Tom Brady's legacy because he's not allowed to be a good human being. People embrace Peyton Manning because he's good, but then he ultimately fails, so he's identifiable to them. We cannot have Tom Brady be the greatest quarterback ever because, one, we did not anoint him. We let him slide all the way to sixth. So we can't give people the hope that they can make it on their own without the system endorsing them. And we can also not have people believe that it's possible to become great. That is what this is about. When we look back on Tom Brady 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now, even when they induct him into the Hall of Fame, they're going to say, he's a cheater. He deflated the footballs. Remember when he was suspended? They have made it so he finally, they put the asterisk. The one they've been trying to put next to him, they finally put next to him.
Right. So all this is fairly depressing. I think there's one technical element that we do want to discuss, and that is, what to me is, I don't know why it's not getting more discussion, because it's sort of the one part of this evidence that could blow the whole thing out of the water in its entirety, which is the matter of gauges, or the problem of pressure, as you might say.
Well, I alluded to that earlier when I mentioned Walt Anderson's memory.
Yes, you did, but I want to get into it just a little bit so that people understand it, so that they don't think we're crazy, non-objective psychopaths here. Which I wouldn't care.
You know
care
what? If you think
if
I'm a
thought.
Crazy, non-objective psychopath, fuck you. I don't even care what you think about football. That's how fucking stupid you are. All right? Shit show.
Well,
shit
Justin,
show.
You shouldn't attack our Canadian listeners like that.
Canadian football makes more sense than the NFL at this point.
I might start watching Canadian football, actually, if Tom Brady's kept the full four-game suspension. But here's a quick thing that we've been looking at here. So the NFL had two air pressure gauges available at the game. One had a Wilson logo on the back and had a long, crooked needle. The other did not have a Wilson logo and had a shorter, straighter needle. I'm going to read
by the way,
a little bit here. Billion dollar
enterprise. They don't have uniform needles and they also have a crooked needle. Billion dollar enterprise.
The gauge with the logo and the longer needle generated higher measurements of the Patriots footballs at halftime. Logo, longer needle, range higher in PSI. If that gauge, the one with the logo and the longer crooked needle, were used to set the PSI for the balls before the game, the measurement from the gauge are the right measurements to rely upon on halftime. And those measurements show that there was no tampering because most of the footballs fell within the PSI range. But referee Walt Anderson didn't clearly remember which gauge he used to set the pressure in the Patriots' ball before the game. And so in the Wells report, reveals that Anderson's best recollection is that he used the gauge with the logo and the longer crooked needle. In other words, Anderson recalls using the gauge before the game that, based on halftime measurements, leads to a finding of no tampering. But the Wells report throws out Anderson's best recollection and says that it is more likely than not that he used the other gauge. Why? Because Wells pressured him into saying that it was possible that he used the other gauge.
Now, hold on a second here. Have you ever been in a situation like that? Because I've been in situations like that where people keep pushing you and they push you and they go, is it possible you don't remember correctly? Well, yeah, it's fucking possible I don't remember correctly. Am I a goddamn computer? Like, I don't have it 100% of recall. So yes, there's always the, it's possible I don't remember correctly. It's possible I'm wrong. Using that as evidence is retarded.
It is, and I think this is a much bigger deal than people are making out of this. They took the witness's answer that it was his best recollection that he used the long crooked needle, which means that the temperature, it would have been, the Patriots basically wouldn't have been off at all, before the game. And then they completely inverted it simply because Wells says, well, is it possible that you didn't? And he says, well, I guess it's certainly possible that I didn't. What? You have to be starting with the assumption of guilt in order to do that for someone.
Correct.
You have to be assuming that whatever this guy says, at the end of this inquisition, I need to have it fit my narrative.
Correct.
This is insane. This is not even something that would be allowed in civil court. So I think that's the one tactical element of this that, you know, regardless of the text messages and Tom Brady's reluctance to show the booby pics of his wife to NFL investigators, this piece of evidence right here makes me want to question the validity of the Wells report.
But what this is you have more concrete evidence of his fucked up perspective than they have of Tom Brady cheating. What this is doing is you're saying, look at his evidence of bias that he's shown us.
Yeah.
Why do we have reason to believe he didn't do that otherwise? That's what that is.
Right. So, I think this whole thing, I mean, I'm really disappointed in the NFL in general and the way it's going in terms of pressuring to a lot of social justice nonsense and really taking this horribly post hoc stance on scandal where they don't do anything and then they issue a huge punishment. And in this case, they decided, well, we're going to get ahead of it. You know, we're basically going to come out and we're going to be as strong and forthright as possible. So we're going to have an independent investigation over whether or not Tom Brady did something that gave him no discernible advantage. It's just, I don't know. It's mind blowing to me and it's disappointing.
They're not getting ahead of it either. This is all still bullshit, right? I'm going to explain to you how this is bullshit.
You're going to explain me?
I'm gonna
get learned.
I told you this is a shit show. I don't even care anymore. I don't care. But I'm gonna explain it anyway because you know what? I do care. Even though I say I don't care, I do care. Deep down, I care. This hurts me. All right. So, as Elliot pointed out in the pre-show, he is suspended 4 games. Why is it 4 games? What's the objective reasoning for 4 games? Elliot, who do they play when they come back?
The Colts.
Oh wow, that's totally a coincidence. That's not a really good marketing strategy. Oh look, Tom Brady comes back in the game against the team that got him suspended. Oh no, that's a coincidence. First of all,
can he beat him this time with regular balls?
Yeah, exactly. Not to mention the fact that they got beat twice, once by Jonas Gray and once by LeGarrette Blount, so fuck you for that, Roger Goodell. Second of all, at what time of day did Roger Goodell release the suspension? Could you explain that to me?
Would that be Monday evening?
Monday evening at, I don't know, about the time that he was peacing out from the office and where everyone else was leaving work?
It's true.
So at the end of the news cycle for the day? So you don't think he released it at the end of the day because he didn't want to deal with the consequences immediately? He wanted to go home and see what people's reactions were so he could figure out what he's going to do to deal with it tomorrow? Because you don't think he had this decided at the beginning of the day and strategically decided to release it at the end of the day like a little bitch?
Gauntlet thrown.
You didn't want to call that number. I would have said all this on the number.
Someone leaked Roger Goodell's number, which is really funny.
And then what was it? This is the other thing I was going to say. How many games are people suspended for performance-enhancing drugs?
It's usually one or two.
Or I've seen four at the most.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that deflating a football would probably, or more probably than not, being generally aware of deflated footballs is worse than performance-enhancing drugs, which change you physically and make you tougher and make it when you hit people, you're hurting them more? Now, I know the argument is Tom Brady didn't cooperate and he needs to cooperate and set an example and cooperate. So you're telling me his not cooperating is worse than performance-enhancing drugs? So then basically the premise you're working with is do exactly what we say, and that's the worst thing at all you can't do. And you know what? You want to connect that to Atlas Shrugged and Objectivism? That's the worst fucking organization you can be in, where the most important thing to them is your obedience to them rather than achieving the objective values you all agree upon. So if the NFL is more about obedience to the NFL than football, the NFL is fucking doomed, or at least football quality in the NFL is doomed.
So Brady should just shrug.
Honestly, that would be the rational thing for him to do, would be to shrug. He's got his four rings, he's got Giselle, he's got all the money he needs, he's got the kids he loves. He now has more of the Massachusetts people loving him than ever. He should just shrug, go underground for a few years, and come back and become Senator of Massachusetts and President of the United States. That's
Please.
What he should do.
Out that dumbass Elizabeth Warren. God.
He would do it in a heart. He would win in a second. So you know what? I don't think he will do it because I think he loves football too much, but that's honestly, it's the most rational thing he could do. I mean, I can see a world where this is what causes, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick to go Galt. I mean, this would be the perfect time for Francisco or Galt to go, you know, sneak into Gillette Stadium and have a meeting with them, and they suddenly disappear. And all of a sudden, Josh McDaniels and Jimmy Garoppolo are running the team in the fall. And the football quality is less, and everyone's upset about it.
Garoppolo with a P.
Yeah.
not Janine Garoppolo. Janine Garoppolo will not be under center for the Patriots, no matter how many games Tom Brady is suspended.
I don't know about the center's romance. I don't know about Brian Stork's love life or her love life, so she might be under center. But that's
no one
story.
Hates themselves that much, honestly. Is there any good news in this? Do you think there's anything that we can look at and say?
Yes. The best news that has come out of this is when I read internet comment sections now, most of the people are saying how retarded this is. So even the Patriots haters, I've seen a number of comments of people who are like, well, just to be clear, I'm not a Patriots fan, I'm a Dolphins fan, or the funniest thing was there were a couple of Lions fans who were like, it was on a Bleacher Report article on Facebook, where they were like, we're Lions fans and we're really upset that they basically knocked us out of the playoffs with that thumping they gave us last season. But this is absolutely retarded and stupid and should never happen. So, this may be the end of Roger Goodell. If it isn't, people are at least being objective about this, which gives me some sort of hope in the world.
Hmm. That's a good thing. I think that also, this isn't a good thing per se, but I don't think the 4-game suspension is going to hold up. I think that's beyond ridiculous, and the NFL players union is going to rake them over the coals for a 4-game suspension for what amounts to having some general awareness of being alive.
So here's the thing about this too. This is more of Roger Goodell's stupid manipulation that he thinks other people are too stupid to understand. Roger Goodell has a number in his head of what he actually wants to suspend someone. So rather than come out and say, this is what I actually want, and then let the process that's in place deal with it in the way it's supposed to and decide if that's an actual objective punishment, he does a non-objective thing to know it's going to get whittled down to what he actually wants.
Yeah.
So he actually wants 2 games. That's what he wants.
Yeah, eventually he's just going to come out and be like, we have decided to amputate his leg. What shall you bargain it down to?
Right.
6-game suspension. Yeah. Have we gotten that all out of us now?
No, I'm going to be referencing it the whole episode. Just go.
Just go. That's a great transition. Just going. Pamela Geller could face capital punishment for draw Muhammad event, Muslim cleric says.
Oh, I thought she deflated football. Sorry. My bad.
Yeah. Equally as bad in the Muslim world because it's touching a pig skin. So, also death to you.
That was good. I like that.
Thank you. If you haven't been following reality lately, you might not have heard of Pamela Geller.
If you've been more focused on inane NFL bullshit than reality, here's some real stuff going on in the world.
She is a blogger and a journalist, and she hosted a controversial Draw Muhammad contest in Garland, Texas, where two members supposedly of ISIS came to kill people, but in fact were killed themselves by a police officer. Thank you, sir.
Enjoy those versions.
Yes,
wait,
he absolutely.
Hasn't, there haven't been riots and stuff because a police officer killed someone?
Not in Texas, just... Especially two terrorists. Those guys, talking about getting 72 virgins. Mm-hmm. Police officer gunned those guys down. Getting a lot more than that. Anyway, people have been debating whether or not Pamela Geller, by the nature of her hosting the Draw Muhammad contest, is responsible for the deaths of these people, and basically whether or not her speech should have been or censored, basically.
Wait, they're asking if she's responsible for the death of terrorists?
Yeah, basically.
Yes.
Well, good. Yes, if she is, good for her. I hope she did it with the intent of them getting killed. Good job, Pamela Geller. That was really clever.
They're saying she's responsible for the attack.
Yeah.
That's
but
what they're
who died in the attack besides the terrorists? Anyone?
Huh?
Did anyone die in the attack except for the terrorists?
Nope.
No.
So then it was all an elaborate ruse to get the terrorists killed. I mean, that's like if John McClane set up Die Hard, he's even awesomer.
Yeah.
Because he just he got Ellis killed, and then everyone else survived, and then, you know, the terrorists lost. I mean, that seems like a win-win to me. Like, I don't understand. So they're mad that the terrorists failed to attack people and died at her? Like,
yep. Yeah. To the point where she's gotten death threats, and I mean, literally on the air, Anjem Chidari, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he was on the air with her and basically said, under Sharia law, you should be executed. Said this to her on the air. So she's getting death threats. The winner of the cartoon contest, Bosch Boston, who is kind of, he runs around in our circles, but I haven't really met him yet. He's been getting death threats, even though he loves it. He's smiling all day. It's just, and this whole thing really shows how important freedom of speech is and how unwilling people on both sides of the aisle, of the philosophically and politically, how unwilling they are to protect it.
I mean, when he said that under Sharia law she should be killed, did she say, I'm sorry, I thought this was America? Like, I thought that's a religious law, right? I thought we had separation of church and state. I mean, under Justin law, you should all be punched in the face for this. Like, under Justin law, Roger Goodell should be beat the fuck up. Like, I don't understand. Like, I can make up weird shit, too.
Under Justin law, we shall guillotine Roger Goodell's balls.
Yeah, okay. Let's deflate his balls.
Ink on Wednesdays.
So, I mean, this was on the Sean Hannity show where she got this death threat, and Sean said to cleric Anjem Chaudhary, I don't know how to pronounce his name, said, but, so
fuck
you're saying
that,
that
how you say his name. Fuck
so, so you want her to die, he said, you know what, she should be put before Sharia law and if found guilty face capital punishment. And Sean replied, but she's not a Muslim. And this is what he said in return. It doesn't matter, Sean. She should have thought of that before she held this competition. So.
That's it. I'm going to set up Justin Religion, JML Religion, come to the midside, and, you know, Roger Goodell, you're fucked, okay?
So that's the midside. It's going to be a compound in Texas, you know?
Anaheim, California.
We're all in Patriots gear, walking around. Yeah, actually, that kind of sounds enticing.
Yeah, would be better than most religions. I'm going to put that out there. But
then based upon that, I can say, you know, maybe Ted Wells should have thought about that before he released this report.
Yeah. This is the creepy thing about Islam, right? And notice that I didn't say radical Islam or totalitarian Islam. I didn't say crazy cuckoo Islam. I said Islam. The religion, the text itself. You want to send me hate mail, please do. My girlfriend grew up Muslim, and I've learned a ton about the religion from her, and how wildly insane it is. So this is the thing about the religion Islam. Islam, all religions try to convert.
So what you're saying is they want to bring people into the fold. So what you're saying is it's more probable than not that you're generally aware of Islam.
It's more probable than not that I have somehow touched the face of Muhammad. Yes. So all religions want to convert. I get that. All the ideologies want to convert. Islam has no interest in converting in a traditional sense. Islam is a mandate to take over the world. The idea is that all people are basically at war with you for not being Muslim. And when someone kills a non-believer in the name of religion, they honestly do not believe that is an initiation of force. They believe that the initiation of force came because you did not submit your will to Allah. And so they are retaliating against your initiation of force. That's why Islam, not radical Islam or totalitarian Islam, needs to be shouted down in this regard. It needs to be, we need to make fun of it. We need to say that it's a horrible ideology where you're offended by the cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad, but not offended by female genital mutilation or pretending to be gay and then killing anyone who comes on to you because sodomy is a sin. Or you're not offended by sending your children to blow up Jews, but you are offended by a stick figure with a beard.
Or you are offended by someone possibly maybe one day in the past deflating footballs.
You are a radically messed up ideology, if that's what you hold. Does this mean that all Muslims, all practitioners of Islam, are bad human beings? And the answer is no. Absolutely not. Because most practitioners of Islam, most practitioners of Islam are not consistent practitioners of Islam.
Because most practitioners of anything aren't consistent.
Yes. And the degree to which you are a non-consistent practitioner of Islam, you can be a moral human being. And the degree to which you are a practitioner of Islam, you cannot be a moral human being.
I think that says everything you need to say about Islam, is the less consistent you are with it, the better you are. That's all you need to say about it.
Now that I have ruined any chance of ever becoming an elected official, I'll let you guys speak.
It's like Bosch Boston says, you know, a good Muslim by our standards is a bad Muslim by Islam standards. And I absolutely think that that's true.
Yes, absolutely.
I just want to take this time to be clear about something. So the thing you said is that they basically think anyone who disagrees with them is physically attacking them, right? They take it as the initiation of force.
Yes, by the fact that you are not submitting to Allah, you have initiated force.
Okay, so this is what I want to be clear about. I want to delineate between that perspective and our perspective. Because we take a hard line a lot in the mid-side. For instance, I'm taking a hard line today on this whole nonsense.
A hard line on soft balls.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that was a good one, too. You're on fire today, Daniel. No.
Not literally, like many Muslims would have me be.
Yes.
But the point I'm making is, we may disagree with people, and we may say it's dangerous, and we may say what Roger Goodell is doing is going to destroy football. However, we do not take that as the initiation of force, and we say he has every right to go and destroy football unintentionally. I don't think he's trying to destroy football. I don't think what he does is right, but just because we disagree with someone doesn't mean we take that as an initiation of force against us. Even with someone like Ted Wells having the opinion that people are malevolent, I do not take that as an initiation of force against me. I take that as a dangerous point of view. I will talk it down, I will say why it's wrong, and I will say why it's dangerous that someone holds that, but I do not take that as initiation of force against me, and that does not give me a right to attack him or say he should die or be physically injured. And that is what makes a free society and a rational society, that you can have those disagreements, and you're not respecting each other. But you're deciding to stay out of each other. Actually, you're respecting each other simply as human beings. You're not respecting each other for your minds. You're simply saying you have as much of a right to exist as I do, and we are going to let what happens with our rights to exist based upon our choices we make, not the choices we make for each other.
You know, Justin, when you were saying that just now, you know who else what you were describing? You're describing the modern day left in a lot of ways. The group that takes the disagreement as an initiation of force. Goodness knows I've been dealing with it all day, you know, with the far left gay activist establishment.
Correct.
Anybody that doesn't agree with gay marriage, all of a sudden they've initiated force.
Correct.
It's mind-boggling that the left and Islamic, you know, jihadists are, that they share a commonality. That should be more than enough of a condemnation on any form of collectivism, whether it's spiritual or material, whatever. Any form of collectivism leads to this kind of barbarism.
But here's the difference, and this is what I'm going to explain to you. It was a suppressed premise in what I was saying. This is why they have to see it as initiation of a force. The reason I do not feel the need to tell other people they're initiating force against me is because I am confident in myself that they are wrong. And I am confident in myself that if I'm wrong, I will change and correct it. But those people, ultimately, are not confident that they're right. They are not confident in themselves, in their minds, in their belief system. And ultimately, they're so threatened by the other side that the only way to defeat it is brute force. Because when you're right, you don't need brute force to win. You have reality on your side. But when you're not right, you need brute force to try and force reality to be different. And that's why they take it like that. That's why Islam does that. Because they know ultimately the only way for their belief system is to be superior is brute force. That's why these people on the left do it. And it's the same thing that Tom Brady, that's being done to Tom Brady by the Wells Report. Because you know what? What's the league learned by now? What's the only fucking way to beat Tom Brady? They sit here and they said after the Kansas City game last year that they were done. And then they went and won the Super Bowl. They are deathly afraid the only way they can beat Tom Brady is by physical force. Because that's how people respond to threats in barbaric cultures. Before industrialization, before America, that is how we dealt with threats. We went out in the yard and we beat the shit out of each other, but we were supposed to be evolved by that, beyond that. But now we are tricking ourselves and we are using words to still create that same thing and use that same power. Those people we were supposed to have gotten rid of and risen above have found a way to manipulate the system to get that back in and try and make it so their own shortcomings, their own lack of self-esteem, and their own fears are what runs society.
Yeah. My God.
I told you,
shit show. So many good rants.
Shit show.
Is this the shit show edition?
No, this is the more probable than not edition. I'm sticking with that because it's a good title. But no, I want to be serious. I mean, why am I going on these rants? I said this to a good friend of ours, Daniel, who I've bonded with recently over the Patriots because I didn't realize he was such a good fan. And, you know, he supported the web series and everything. And we talked back and forth. And one of the things you've always told me about, Daniel, is the hatred of the good for being the good. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I never really believed it because I've always been generous. And as I said, I don't look at other people as threats in that way that needs to be shouted down and beat up. The only time I want to beat somebody up is when I think they're so irrational I can't deal with them, and I see them as like I said, I see them as a threat. If I see someone as a physical danger to me, that's when I start getting like aggressive. But beyond that, I don't think in that way. I don't think of like, oh, I see someone good, I want to tear them down. I want to destroy them. I see someone good and I admire them because I say, wow, it's awesome that someone can do that, and what can I learn from them and be more like that? So I was always generous with people. And I always said, no, that can't be true. There has to be another reason. There has to be something they literally morally object to about these people. But then to see what has happened with Tom Brady now, this is, I mean, it's like satire. This is like Jonathan Swift eating babies. That's how extreme it is. There is no way I can't deny that this is hatred of the good for being the good. That trying to destroy him just simply for the fact that he is good. And you want to know a good thing that came out of this you asked earlier? It's mm-hmm. changing my perspective. I have to accept that. I have to.
And I think you're right to accept it because I think it goes on, especially in media. The media is the quintessential example of hatred of the good. They want to tear down anything that is perceived as good.
Well, and that's why they have this fucking radical Islam versus normal Islam shit because they want us to accept it so it'll destroy the good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought I'd bring that back to the story.
Thank you. Very good. I think it's important especially in the Islam case here, but also in the Tom Brady case, that we stand up for what is right and for essentially what is civilization. And that goes back to your point about not wanting to initiate force and respecting each other's rights to have opinions.
Respecting each other's rights to exist. When you go out in the world, and the world is not owned by people. So when you're in a parking lot, and there are laws that you agree upon that are driving laws, those laws are agreed upon, so your rights will be respected as much as the other person's. The second you break that contract by thinking your rights are more important than another person, you're a fucking dick.
It's true. Absolutely. And do not send us a picture of yourself.
No, because I don't want to see your tiny penis that you're compensating for, all right?
So one final element of this story to tie it all up in a nice little bow before we move on is the argument that the left has been throwing at Pamela Geller, other than she's responsible for this, which is, of course you have the right to hold this kind of event. But in America, we were founded on the idea of respecting religion. And what she did was profoundly disrespectful in such a strong way that kind of speech should be forbade. That such a profound disrespect must be outlawed. Thoughts?
Respecting a right to religion and respecting religion are not the same thing.
Well, I mean, then can we outlaw the Wells Report? Because that is so disrespectful to my religion. I tell people, you know, they go, do you go to church? I say, on Sundays, I worship at the church of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. I tell people that.
Yeah.
I mean, my point is, it's a ridiculous fucking standard.
Yes. And it's always bothered me that we talk about, you know, not offending certain religions and whatnot. I mean, I'm an atheist. I don't have a religion. And so, but I have profound beliefs in my life that are stronger than many of the religious people I know in terms of what, you know, the beliefs they hold in religion. And my beliefs are offended pretty much on a minute-by-minute basis. Just living in Washington, D.C., interacting with other human beings. Why is it that my profound beliefs that I have thought about and put into a cohesive system for living my life, why are those less important than commandments that most people don't even have to think about or integrate, that they just have to blindly obey?
Well, it's like religious freedom laws. You know, you have a right to, you know, refuse service based on religious beliefs and all that. And what they're completely overlooking is, wait a minute, but you should be able to refuse service to anybody for any reason. Why do religious people get this exemption? What about those of us that might have moral disagreements that are not religious? Like, why don't we get that pass? I mean, it's little things like that that really show that there is a gap. There's definitely a gap between us, between the religious and the non-religious.
Yeah, and again, with the, you know, offending people, this is deeply offensive for Islam to have a picture drawn of the Prophet Muhammad. That's fine. You can be offended by that thing. But I think as Penn Jillette famously once said, I don't give a fuck.
Oh, I thought you were going to go in a different direction. No, there's an episode of Bullshit about that where he talks about being offended. And he said, good, be offended. I want you to offend me, and I want to offend you. And when we have a disagreement over what offends us, we'll have discussions. And then you can convince me that what I'm doing is wrong and offensive, because that's the only way to make progress. Now, of course, he said it with a lot more profanity, but that wasn't an episode of Bullshit.
I've seen the one and it's quite good, but in an interview about something that someone was offended by, he said something to the effect of, when I hear someone say I'm offended, it literally means nothing to me. Like, you might as well have just said, ugh. Because it doesn't translate to anything in reality.
Like,
I don't care that you're offended. Things offend me all the time. Adults move on. Adults, you know, get up and go. And to their credit, some of the bigger mosques in Garland, Texas knew that this was going on and basically just said, it's fine, just let her do her thing and we're going to ignore it. We're not going to make a big deal out of it. That's how adults, even adults who believe in a religion that I think is nonsensical, handle things. They don't try to kill the other human being. And I frankly, I don't care what form of expression you have and how fucking offensive it is, if the person who is being offended, their response is to try to murder you, they are profoundly wrong. The end. So, fuck you, liberals.
Speaking of the hatred of the good for being the good and irrationally attacking people and turning battles to physical force, we follow up on Age of Ultron in TV with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. If you listened to our podcast last week, our episode last week, following the release of Age of Ultron, where we reviewed the movie and talked about the systematic attack on Tony Stark that the movie was, you'll know that we were very critical of it and we were very unhappy with it. You know, for the same reason I'm very unhappy with Deflategate. Iron Man is, you know, the movies are amazing and the character itself is a hero of mine. I know he's fictional. I have a 3D printed action figure here with my face. I'm in the Iron Man suit, so, you know, it means a lot to us. And some people have been a bit critical of our attack on the movie, in our review of the movie, our critique of it. They said it's not really true. But then, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the companion series that's showrun by Joss Whedon's brother and sister-in-law, and Joss Whedon has a lot of input on, drove home the anti-Tony Stark point. And also, I want you to notice how rhetorically this quote sets the stage of what we're talking about. Everything in the Wells report, we're talking about how he's not dealing with facts, but he's portraying it as facts. Right? Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
100%.
This is the rhetorical technique they use. Likewise, here is a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who they had Edward James Olmos play it. So, you know, they were thinking that when they had this actor say this line. And this is the line he had to say to explain what happened in Age of Ultron. This is how they want people who consume the Marvel Universe to understand what happened in Age of Ultron. I quote, "You want to talk facts? Ultron was created because people were too close to Tony Stark. They were blinded by his charm. They trusted him. Never even thought to look at what he was working on. The Avengers, they let one man do whatever he wanted, and the world was almost destroyed for it. We're S.H.I.E.L.D. We're better than that. At least, we should be." Now, the first thing I want to say before we get into analyzing Tony Stark is, you could sub Tom Brady in there and talk about deflated footballs. The Patriots, they let one man do whatever he wanted, and football was almost destroyed for it. We're the NFL. We're better than that. At least we should be.
And in both cases, it was completely untrue. Because I watched that scene, and you know me, I have defended Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I do like the show, but that scene was so aggravating because it completely doesn't match what we saw in the movie at all, or what we have seen in any of the previous movies. I mean, they let him do whatever he wanted. On the contrary, I mean, they were on his ass about everything. That they were affected by his charm, on the contrary, it seemed like they were kind of annoyed by his charm. They're talking about on the show from a character who has absolutely no clue what went on because he doesn't come out in the movie at all. It has to be there for a point. And I've had to grudgingly accept that Justin is right, that there is a systematic attack on Tony Stark.
Look, I want to love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. too, okay? Look, Phil Coulson's a good character, and the actor Clark Gregg is a great, great guy. You can see him in the public eye.
Agent May
is fucking amazing. Give Agent May a spinoff, please. I would watch that, okay? Her episode where they revealed her backstory, fucking incredible. Incredibly She's acted, so incredibly written.
Oh, so good.
Ming-Na Wen is amazing. Like, if you read her on Twitter, she's great. Grant Ward, great character, amazingly acted. Again, the guy is amazing on Twitter. But then the thing I have to wonder, are these characters only good because of how good the actors are? and because of how good the people are. Because one of the things we saw with Lost was it was so successful because not only did they have a great concept, but they had nearly perfect casting on the show. And you see the importance of casting. So I'm beginning to wonder if the only things I love about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are just that the actors are able to find the goodness in the characters as they're written, and it's not actually as the writers intend them.
I don't know. That's a good point. Because, I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, I cannot remember a single episode this entire season where the character of Sky, for example, who is supposed to be a genius hacker, there is not a scene at all this season where she has hacked anything. She has not been a hacker at all. She's become this agent, superpowered, but no hacking. I mean, I think when you first talked about how uneven the season was, it was still like at the midway point, so I wasn't as sold on it. But now, I really do feel like there is an uneven season. And I, forgive me for bringing up another show. I brought this show up a lot of other times on the other show, other podcasts. But I compare it to another show that I watch called Arrow on the CW. I always bring it up because I honestly think it is a superior show in terms of how it structures its seasons and how it integrates a plot and a theme. And when I make that comparison in person, people kind of give me this look like, what? Because they really like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and they confuse a fast-paced plot with a well-structured plot.
Correct.
They're not necessarily the same thing.
Correct.
You know, and actually one of the guys that I regularly argue with about this was saying that Arrow was becoming too much of a soap opera, which is not true. And he liked that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was more action and more. And I'm like, no, you have to have a development of plot and theme. They have to be well integrated, and the characters are the meeting point of that, of how the characters are the ones who act in the plots, but they're also the ones through which you express your theme. And that, I mean, and I think that there are other shows like Arrow where they express it in spades. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. suffers from that. They don't really have a cohesive theme. They don't really integrate the theme in the plot very well because too much of what they do is reliant on the cinematic universe. And this is the show where they really have the ability to break new ground and create new canon. So they shouldn't be bouncing around from the other movies. Let them move forward and create their own canon, and maybe they'll do better writing and get away from this really horrible trap that they're in this season.
I agree, and speaking of the movies and being beholden to it, it was absolutely stupid. They had this thing, Daniel, you're probably not aware of this because you don't watch the show, but you know how the helicarrier came out of nowhere in the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the show, they've had this thing where Coulson's been hiding a secret all season, and it's called the Theta Protocol. So in the teaser for the most recent episode, they had Patton Oswalt show up and he talks to Agent Coulson about Theta Protocol. And it turns out Theta Protocol is the helicarrier and he was rebuilding it without anyone knowing it because apparently he needs to keep that a fucking secret from his team for some reason. And then there was another aside where somebody was like, oh, Coulson, you saved the entire world with Theta Protocol. So they tried to make it so Coulson was the one who saved the world. Not, you know, Tony fucking Stark. But anyway, before I toss it to you, Daniel, to get your opinion on this whole Stark thing. Elliot, I agree with what you said, but I just want to hone in on one other thing. Sky. Now, here's the thing. Joss Whedon is usually known for his strong women, right? You look at Buffy, and you see the character of Buffy. You look at Firefly, and you see River, and you even see Kaylee, and you see Inara on Firefly.
Dollhouse,
yeah, those were all very strong characters. And then you see Angel, Cordelia was strong. And then I'm blanking on the girl's name that joined Fred.
Fred
was a very strong character, right? He's known for his strong characters. But can we talk about Sky for a second and how much I fucking hate her? You want to talk about male disposability? You want to talk about gynocentric? I am so goddamn sick of every man falling all over Sky when all she ever does is, I don't know what's going on. I'm so intimidated by the world. I'm so sad. Why does everyone treat me so meanly? I don't understand. You've got fucking Agent May who can destroy anyone and nobody's falling in love with her. But all of these guys, no matter who she meets, is falling all over Sky. It's starting to make me sick to my stomach.
Yeah. I don't have anything to say about that. I don't watch the show.
So go ahead and say what you have to say about this whole Tony Stark thing then.
Yeah, go May.
That's all you need to say.
So here's the thing. I had a talk with a friend of mine from Chicago, very smart guy, loves art and aesthetics, has read Romantic Manifesto, and he made an interesting observation. He said he completely hated Age of Ultron for the primary reason that Tony Stark has suddenly become an idiot. And I thought that was interesting, and I asked him to elaborate, and he said, well, Tony Stark is supposed to be this genius who can make anything work, but everything he touches in this movie turns to shit. And on top of that, he defers to Captain America for every major decision. Why? Why is Captain America all of a sudden the guy who's the head of the pack? What happened? So I thought that was an interesting observation, and I think that the quote from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. makes it pretty darn clear where they're going with this. The whole, we let one man do whatever he wanted without, you know, checking it out. Well, apparently now Tony Stark is going to be the one who feels so much guilt over this that he's going to be the one who wants everyone checked out all the time by the government.
Right.
And Captain America is going to be the one opposed to this, even though he didn't want Tony Stark working on this program.
Yep.
So it's all completely nonsensical, but
it makes sense in their world, because this goes back to what I was saying about the two alternative interpretations of all the data in the Wells report, right? So you can either assume Tony Stark is a genius and knows what he's doing, or you can assume that he is so up his own ass and has problems that he's incompetent. So they're just assuming he's incompetent. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, which is...
Well, actually, no, I take that back. They're not assuming he's incompetent. So they're showing the errors in his ways, and they're going to turn him malevolent. So they're assuming the malevolence. I'm sorry, I misspoke. The two sides are he's good and incompetent, or he's bad and makes mistakes and eventually, you know, wants to do bad things. And that's where they're going with this.
The mad scientist. That's the significance of that speech.
Right.
That
yeah.
So the whole idea is that Captain America is pure-hearted, whereas Tony Stark isn't. That's the point.
Pure farted. I hate him.
This is why I hated Winter Soldier. I know everyone loved it, but this is why I hated it. It was like, it was a fantasy about how Captain America was so oppressed by the rest of the world. Because everyone out, the rest of the world was just looking to, again, this is the whole threat thing again. This is what we were talking about with Islam and talking about with the Wells Report and everything. Captain America was all about how there's this idea that people are looking to kill anyone who disagrees with them. So they're going to somehow project out into the future all the people that could one day possibly be a threat and kill people. Because, you know, that's what rational people believe. And then somehow Captain America, in his irrational belief of, you know, protecting people no matter what, is somehow superior to that belief. So they give us a fucking false dichotomy in Captain America, and that's the false dichotomy that is the superior one in the Marvel Universe. And that's why everyone loved it. Because anyone who's successful and powerful is just looking to destroy and kill anyone who's against them.
Yeah, and Captain America has to be against all bullies.
Right.
Because he's Captain Anti-Bullying now. But one other observation, actually, this friend of mine had some students with him to watch this. He's a teacher. And a student made an interesting observation as well, which is the whole movie was about working together. Except why then did the heroes all do really well at the end individually, you know, even though basically the togetherness that they accomplished at the end was that they were all within the same 200-mile swath of land.
Well, and listen to Captain America. He told them to save people, so they did it.
Yeah. But it was individually they did well. They just happened to be in the same proximity.
Well, individually they did well until Quicksilver tried to help Hawkeye, and then he got destroyed.
Right, until they actually tried to work as a team.
By the way, who were the two people who worked together to save the floating city in the sky? Wasn't it Iron Man and Thor who worked together to save that?
Yeah.
Oh.
Absolutely.
It's not even good storytelling.
Finally, one last observation, and this is generally about the whole marketing tactic by Marvel to make one enormous universe that you apparently have to watch every bit of in order to get the full picture. My friend in Chicago had no fucking clue what was going on with the World Stone and the Vision guy. Like, just no idea what the hell was happening because he never watched Guardians of the Galaxy. And Guardians of the Galaxy is the only place where they explain the significance of the World Stones. And so that entire point, the entire ending to him just seemed like this complete, oh no, space monkeys are attacking kind of ending. Like, just out of nowhere, made no sense. So I think as the Marvel Universe grows, there's going to be more and more of this. And it's unfortunate, because the marketing is putting marketing. Marvel, see what I did there? Freudian slip, is putting marketing over storytelling. Again, be clear, make a boatload of money, but do it by making good products.
But I wanna...
Not by extracting every single penny from every 35-year-old who loves superhero comics.
I agree with you, but I want to piss off all the comic-loving fans in our audience right now. This is why I could never get into comics. Because it's always a minimal amount of story, and then it's just read next week, and it never ends. So it's like a friend of ours said about these movies. I'm getting sick of watching Marvel's 3.5-hour trailer for the next 3.5-hour trailer.
Yeah,
they've applied comic book storytelling to movies, and they've hooked everyone. And I'm just wondering when everyone's going to get sick of it, and when it's going to run out of steam. Because I think there will always be. I think it's sort of like pro wrestling, right? It has its heyday right now, and I think it'll always be around. But eventually, they're going to have to scale the budgets back on these things. Because they're not going to be able to continue making, I wouldn't think, $1 billion a pop.
Yeah, agreed. Well, I mean, I think they're just going to, you know, ring Tony Stark for every penny he's worth and then toss him out with the garbage because he's a selfish idiot. And then they'll be done with it after they've made their $10 billion or whatever.
Well, right, and that's the same reason to get mad about the Wells report and the suspension and everything is Marvel's made its money off of the back of that Iron Man movie. Off of the back of Robert Downey Jr., off of the back of America embracing the hero that is the American sense of life. In the same way that the NFL has made so much money off of the back of Tom Brady and this is how they fucking do him. Like, this is the kind of thing the mob would kill you over. After all I've given to you, this is what you do for me, this is how you treat me. And then you end up in the bottom of the fucking sea with the fishes, with lead, with concrete boots on.
Yeah, the Italian side of you is scaring me right now.
Well, speaking of other things that have been canceled and don't necessarily need to be, because we're coming to the end of the television season and the networks are starting to pick up pilots that they want to produce, that means to balance their budget, they also have to cancel shows. So a bunch of shows have been canceled. I'm just going to read the names of some of them here and we'll go into saying whether you guys have any that you miss or not. So NBC canceled State of Affairs. It canceled Constantine. Marry Me, About a Boy, One Big Happy, A to Z, Bad Judge. The Following has been canceled on Fox. Mindy Project has been canceled. And Battle Creek. Oh, no, it says ABC, Forever, and Resurrection are canceled.
Stalker canceled.
And what was canceled?
Stalker.
Stalker was canceled, which I know you enjoyed, Elliot, and Battle Creek was canceled. So, is there anything here that you guys are going to miss?
No. I mean, I may have watched one episode of some of these, but none of them really caught on. I mean, I guess I will... through you, miss Battle Creek, but I never got around to watching it, so.
Oh, also it says here Fox canceled Backstrom and Mulaney, and of course they mentioned Utopia, but that was a while ago.
Yeah, not shocked by any of those.
The Following surprised me. I never watched it, but from all accounts, it was a really intense show, at least in its first season. I guess the second season kind of slid. That's the only explanation I can find, but that surprised me a lot.
Yeah, it did well in its first season, but again, there wasn't really any sort of thematic integration to that show. It was sort of just like serial killer with a twist. I watched some episodes of Constantine. I thought it was pretty decent. I mean, it would have been good if it stayed on the air. It would have raised the quality of television overall. But yeah, the show that I think people are going to regret canceling maybe one day is Battle Creek. It's a very, 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 very strong show, and I really like it a lot. I mean, Daniel, did you ever watch any of the episodes?
No, I never got around to it.
Well, it was on 10 at night on Sunday.
Well, they're going to air the rest of it, right?
It's opposite what? The Walking Dead? What else? I mean, it's just ridiculous. They never gave it a shot.
Correct. It sort of feels like somebody gave it a pilot order based upon the names of the people involved, Vince Gilligan and David Shore. And then they were kind of like, well, we need to bury this because they gave it such a strong order, 13 episodes that they promised to air, and they're going to air all 13. But like you said, Elliot, they put it in a time slot where it was like they were trying to bury it and kill it. It was like a foregone conclusion.
No wonder people turn to Netflix. I mean, really. It's just no wonder. Broadcast is just dead.
Yeah. Now,
I did hear a rumor that Constantine was probably going to go over to the CW since it's part of the DC television universe. They're thinking it might go to CW to be with like the Flash and Arrow and all that. But other than that, I never watched the show, and I was really interested to see it. I was waiting until the whole season was available on iTunes, and then I was just going to watch it from the beginning, kind of marathon it. But it's kind of sucks that it's canceled.
And Netflix is in Hulu is in negotiations to rescue the Mindy Project, which
why?
I say, yeah, that's exactly what I say. Yeah.
It's social justice warriors. You know why they're bringing that show back.
Like, they let Enlisted go. Nobody wanted to pick up Enlisted, and that was a show I loved, and nobody picked it up, but they want to rescue the Mindy Project? Are you kidding me?
The one show I was happy that was not canceled was Fresh Off the Boat.
Yeah, that was renewed. Congratulations, Forrest Wheeler. Glad to see you're still on television.
Excellent television, yes.
Yeah, and for some reason, the little show that could... Undateable. Every once in a while, there's a show that you're like, how is this still going? Don't get me wrong. It's an amazing show. I love it. I mean, the writing's not too great, but it's the actors that are great, and you can tell they just love making it, and they're very funny people. For instance, they just did a live episode, so if you can watch both the East Coast and the West Coast airing, and it's a little different and very funny. And you can just tell they love making the show. And for some reason, it keeps going. I would think they would cancel it. I don't know how it gets ratings. I wouldn't think it would resonate with people, but, you know, you see all this stuff. It's disappointing that Battle Creek goes, but then again, you do get shows like Fresh Off the Boat gets going, and then Undateable keeps going. So there are always good things, too.
And Person of Interest got renewed, which makes me very happy, because that means more Amy Acker on our television screen, and that's always a good thing.
It means more procedural.
It's not a procedural. Watch the show. It's not a procedural.
So defensive.
Oh, it's so good. I get defensive because there's some shows that are so good and nobody will take a chance on them. I mean, I try to tell people about Person of Interest, about Arrow, and nobody really cares. And I'm like, you don't understand. These are really good shows.
I mean, I would be more willing to watch Arrow if I had liked The Flash. I thought it was decent, but I just thought it was pretty hollow.
What, The Flash?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of the lighthearted one. Arrow is a little bit darker. It's a little bit more substantive, but it has more substance.
Substantive.
Substantive. But it is a very good show. And like I said before, it's a much better integration of plot and theme. The first season is good, but the second season is better. This past season, the third season, has been extraordinary.
You know, honestly, I think the thing that's going to get us burned in effigy is not like our anti-Islam, anti-NFL, pro Tom Brady, pro Patriot stance. It's going to be our pro DC, anti Marvel stance.
Yeah, possibly.
Well, we're not making friends anywhere we go. So
we're not here to make friends.
You know, here's the thing. Okay, can I just stop and say something about this?
Sure.
I don't go out in my life and I'm like, you know, everyone loves Marvel, so I should probably love DC. But it always works out that way. Have you ever wondered that? Like, over the past year, I've seen myself become more and more of a DC fan and less of a Marvel fan. And I just say to myself, how does that happen? Is that just the way the world, like, does anyone have any explanation for that kind of thing?
I think in your genes.
That's what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're less committed to a whole universe than Marvel is. So
you're missing my point, Elliot. I'm not talking about, like, literally, I understand why I'm a DC fan and not a Marvel fan, but I'm talking about whenever there's, like, these popular dichotomies, except for, like, Coke. I'm a fan of Coke versus Pepsi. Yeah. But I always seem to go for the one that is more demonized. And I don't, like, I'm not doing it on purpose. No one else has that experience?
I do like some things that are popular, so.
I just don't care enough, like, to pay attention to what other people like. I like what I like, and, I really haven't thought about whether other people like it or not.
You don't have to care to know that there's DC versus Marvel, right? That's a pretty obvious battle.
I don't really listen to what other people say. And in fact, to be honest with you, most of the people that I know in life who are huge comic book fans, they like them both equally. Like, I went to MegaCon back in April here, which is our version of Comic-Con. I mean, and they liked everything. They went to all the panels, the Marvel panels and the DC panels. I mean, I don't think that the dichotomy really exists the way that people seem to think it does.
Okay, so I know what I've learned this week. We need a giant mute button for these stupid people. So, of course, when we need a giant mute button for the internet and stupid people on it, where do we go? It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
Sony, stupid, Xbox, lame, PC, gaming all the way, EA, blow, Steam, rocks, God, rest, form, on Firefox. See, these things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, whoring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit. This is, in brackets, it says serious. So serious answers only, guys. Let's put on our serious faces here, okay?
Penis.
Super cereal.
What is the most corrupt thing you have ever encountered? Now, it says encounter. So I'm going to say we can't say the Wells report and the Tom Brady suspension. I think they mean physical firsthand encounter. Or can we agree on that premise?
Alright.
I think the answer is the same for all of us, right? The Department of Motor Vehicles. Anything government, really, but the DMV is probably like the most corrupt thing in the world.
I was gonna say I live in goddamn Washington DC.
So those are your answers?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of things like, unions that my various family members have had to deal with who've been wildly corrupt. Just in terms of how they spend dues and how votes are counted. Like, my grandfather used to tell a story all the time about them doing a voice vote once, for instance, and they said, all in favor of the motion, which the union supported, say yay. There were about 13 people in the room said yay. All opposed say no. And the remaining about 350 people all screamed no at the top of their lungs. And the guy was like, oh, too close to call. We'll have to do a ballot vote. And they did a ballot vote. And it amazingly, the yeas won. And it passed. So those kind of things. The metro system is wildly corrupt. Found out in, like, I think 2010 that one of the higher paid metro employees was a retired janitor making $217,000 a year. You're right. Basically any sort of intersection between government and business is going to be wildly corrupt.
Yep.
Any sort of government entity is almost always going to be wildly corrupt. So, Justin, you have anything different?
Yeah, I have something that's very different. I'm not going to name specific names and I'm not going to name specific companies, but I will say that I don't think it was the entire company, but I think there was one person in a specific company that was extremely corrupt, and I think it hurt the quality of the product. And what I'm referring to is there was somebody who worked in marketing, and this was something that I don't want to say my level of involvement in, but people will be able to figure it out if they think about it long and hard. And this person was knowingly taking a lot of money from the people in charge and not doing much work and giving a very poor product in return, and also sticking his nose into non-marketing business that he knew nothing about. And because of this, it hurt the product greatly. And it's one of the most corrupt things I've ever seen in my entire life. And then, you know, he did the same thing to me when I basically went galt on him, and he was like, well, why are you saying you're doing these things for me when you're not? Because it didn't make a difference. And, you know, you didn't earn what you got anyway, so I don't give a fuck what you think. I didn't do anything immoral.
Yeah, I would try to figure that out, but I don't know. I just have to go ahead and shrug.
Totally shrug.
All right, so I think this is a good time now to move on to the next Reddit. What's one thing that will ruin a movie for you?
Children? Is that what we're saying?
I don't think it's going to the movie and seeing it.
Yeah.
Because so if that's the case, it's, you know, fucking other people in the theater. And I don't
I hate seeing children on screen.
Really? Why?
No, I'm just kidding. Oh. Just kidding! God.
That'll get the hate mail.
I mean, there's not a lot. Like, I'm really good about suspending, disbelief and just going with whatever the movie is giving me. But I guess it would have to be concretized as, like, if you've set up rules for a universe and then you blatantly disregard those rules later on, that will take me out of a movie. I'm trying to think of a really good example. I guess the one that comes to mind most readily is Signs, the movie with Mel Gibson and Joaquin Phoenix, directed by Shyamalama Ding Dong. The rules of the universe being, of course, that these were aliens coming to Earth, but it was supposed to be, you know, our Earth and our planet. So the thing that kills them is, spoiler alert, water, except that they're running around in a cornfield, which has got to be about 90% humidity, on a planet that is 79% the most deadly thing to them.
But what if this is the only option they have left?
They're in a cornfield with 90% humidity. They would be walking around just basically burning alive.
Well, like, in the film, they only walk around at night, so the humidity is probably lower anyway.
That's why it's at night. It's not set at night for mood. It's set at night because of that.
So, like, I'm not really super naturalistic about those things, but in that case, when the conclusion of your movie breaks the rules of your movie, to me, that's one of the worst M. Night Shyamalan things I've ever seen. Right below The Happening.
Pretty hard to be worse than The Happening. What about you, Elliot?
There's a thing called the idiot ball. And, it's mostly in TV, but you see it in films too. A character that's established as being really competent, usually in a particular field, like they're really good at computers or they're really good at science in some way, or they're good physically, you know, in terms of martial arts or whatever. In order to propel the story, they do something completely dumb that's completely out of character, and it's done for the sake of whatever story they want to tell. I absolutely hate it. They call it the idiot ball because on a TV show, every week, the idiot ball gets passed to someone else who does something stupid so that they can propel the plot and so on. And it comes up in movies too, where they establish a character as being incredibly competent in some way, but just for the sake of moving the story forward, they do something incredibly dumb and incredibly out of character so that it can set off the chain of events of the film. And it just drives me nuts. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
I understand what you're saying. I just think that that's a result of poor writing. Because even super smart people make mistakes at times, but there are reasons they make the mistake. The problem is they're not establishing the reason. So your issue sounds to me more like shallow writing, where they're not establishing the reason for these things happening. They're turning everything into a plot device rather than actually they're privileging plot over character.
But even crappy, like poor writing, I can tolerate to an extent, but that one trope in a script that's already poorly written, I think it's what sets me over the edge, more than anything else.
Justin?
Okay, well, there's two things, and I'll start with the more mechanical one first. I cannot stand expository dialogue. I think it is the biggest cop-out ever, where two characters are having a conversation, and the entire point of the conversation is like, can you believe that thing happened 5 years ago, and now it's happening again? No, I can't believe that. And did you see the way she reacted to that? I know. that was unbelievable. I wonder what she'll do next. She's so unpredictable. So they've established a character, they've established events, and they've established these people's feelings about it, all without any sort of just being normal. They've just explicitly told. The number one rule of writing in fiction and nonfiction is show, don't tell. And it's just all telling. I can't stand that.
It's actually really funny. There's a small version of that that actually really bothers me that I didn't think about until you said that, which is whenever someone who is intimately familiar with another person, just like, especially at the beginning of the movie, where they're like, they drive up and he's like looking and he sees the door open and he goes, ah, my brother, Eduardo Taran. And
yeah, like, that's a perfect example of that. I hate that so much.
Or like what? The evil speech of evil, where the villain, you know, kills time explaining his evil plan to the hero, you know, and gives the hero time to, that it's another version of that. It's like, we don't really need to hear this. Just go about your plan. We'll figure it out.
Right. Because it, again, it's weak writing. It's not being able to properly integrate your story. Because if it's your brother and his name's Eduardo, there should be a time where your character naturally calls his brother by his name. And you should be able to figure out it's his brother from context. Like,
right.
Hey, you know, are we going to go see mom now? Or, you know, I thought you were supposed to see mom this weekend. Why were you at the racetrack? Something like that. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's technically expository because you're establishing he was at the racetrack when he was supposed to see his mother. But that's a natural question somebody would ask that would come up in conversation. So there is a way to do it. So, yeah, that's the worst when they're trying to establish it. Have you met my assistant, Kimmy? Fuck! Okay, and then the other one, this is what we saw in Age of Ultron. I can't stand when a movie is going with a certain theme, and then because they want to shoehorn in an agenda, they have characters do and say things that don't make sense. Can't stand it. It will instantly, the second I watch the movie, I'll go, they're awful, they're stupid.
Good ones, very good ones. All right. Well done, gentlemen. We're geniuses.
Last Reddit, and this should be a good one today. This is brackets NSFW. That means not safe for work. Although if you're listening to the Midside at work, I hope you have it on very low volume because it is not safe for work. Or anywhere else, as Daniel likes to say.
Thank you.
What fucked up question have you always wanted to ask but haven't had the context to bring it up?
Is this just, like, in general or to a specific person?
Can be either of those.
It's kind of a tough one. I had a problem as a child that, basically the way that I rebelled as a child was to become a Republican because my mother was the most forthright, open, progressive, liberal parent you could possibly imagine who wasn't a hippie. Want to stipulate that. So, lots of pot. So she would say, I could ask her literally anything. I remember asking her when I was six what a 69 was. And she explained in not graphic detail, but pretty solid detail what it was. So
when a man and a woman love each other very much.
Or a man and a man. Just saying.
I was making the common trope joke, Elliot.
So I don't know. I instead of me asking a question, I will tell you some of the more bizarre questions that I found amusing on Reddit. Krogi asks, what is a lethal dose of semen? Like, when will you actually overdose on semen? And then he actually gives an answer. So he did research. Apparently semen contains zinc, and zinc is toxic after 225 milligrams. Semen contains 175 micrograms. This means you would get a lethal dose in 1,286 ejaculations with a margin of error of plus minus 40 micrograms per ejaculation, assuming a healthy man. About 10 mls of ejaculate, that's 1.3 liters of ejaculate before you would die. It's just, that's for you, Elliot, mostly.
Thank you, I appreciate
but,
it.
Yeah.
I'm putting it down.
Thank you. Other ones that were semi-bizarre, how long does it really take for your body to normalize after childhood? Something most men are interested in, who are going to have children later in their lives. How many morticians are necrophiliacs? Don't want to think about it. One thing that Adam Carolla brought up the other day, which is interesting, is that you always hear about fecal matter being on everything. Basically, like when they swab any surface area in any public area, it contains some amount of fecal matter. So on an average day, how much fecal matter do you come in contact with, sort of by accident?
Well, we do deal with shit every day, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was waiting for you to say about 100 pages of the Wells report.
No, 243 pages of the Wells report.
I was assuming some of it was just footnotes and nonsense, but yeah.
Footnotes is legalese for bullshit.
There you go. Here's one for you, Elliot. Why do many, but not all gay men talk with a lisp?
I've only ever met maybe two gay men that spoke with a lisp, and it was not an affectation. Like, they actually had a condition of the mouth where they spoke with a lisp. So those are really I think it's a stereotype.
One of the guys who answers under it claims to be gay, and he says it's done mostly to distinguish ourselves from straight men, and it can be completely turned on or off.
I that's probably like a New York Chelsea answer or a West Hollywood answer, because I don't speak with a lisp. None of the gay men that I know, except for those two, speak with a lisp. So I don't know. That is not my wheelhouse.
Are these questions really fucked up?
No, I mean, I'm taking out some of the fucked up ones, actually.
Yeah, but like a perfect example of a fucked up question would be like, if I were to walk up to a pedophile and be like, so imagine me at like 11 years old, would you do me? Like, that's a fucked up question.
That's a therapy question. Thank you.
That's funny. All right. So I have one.
Oh yeah?
Are you fucking retarded? That's the one I always want to ask people, but I don't have the right context to bring it up in.
Are you asking Commissioner Goodell, or?
That is a perfect example. I would love to go up to Commissioner Goodell and have a conversation and say to him, are you fucking retarded? Like, I would love to do that, but I never have the context to do that. I've had that context with people sometimes, and I enjoy when I ask that, but usually I do not have the context.
You have one hell of a context now.
That's it.
What did we learn today, Daniel?
You mean other than 1.3 liters of semen will kill you?
Yes, other than that.
Well, I learned a lot about Spygate, actually, in doing research for the Deflategate article, and actually learned that taping signals never has been, and still to this day, is not illegal. It's just where you tape them from.
Elliot?
I learned that Tom Brady and Tony Stark have a lot more in common than I probably would have originally thought.
Yeah, I think Iron Man is the Tom Brady of superheroes.
It's true.
Right down to the blonde girlfriend.
Who is also an awesome woman. Not a coincidence. That's the other thing. Fucking, you want to talk about feminism? Who's Tony Stark married to? Jesus. It's just in every angle.
Justin,
are you fucking retarded, Marvel? Are you fucking retarded? I learned that we need a mute button for the internet. And it needs to be just all of these people who run around talking as if their point of view is the taken for granted point of view. They just deserve to automatically be muted.
It's very Islamic of you.
Religion of Justin.
Religion of Justin.
Welcome to the midside, bitches. Fuck you, Roger Goodell. That's our motto.
May Brady be with you and also with you.
The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, right? I mean, we got Belichick, Brady, and I don't know who else.
And the Holy Ghost.
Just always the Holy Ghost.
It's the cool one. Well, if you love Tom Brady, or you hate Tom Brady, or you love Iron Man, or you hate Iron Man, why don't you tell us why don't you tell us and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes? Why not 4?
What? If you hate Tom Brady and you hate Iron Man, don't even bother reviewing us.
No, I want you to review us, but give us a 5-star rating. That's the point. I don't care if you disagree with everything we say, you still need to give us a 5-star rating. That's the point.
Oh, no,
write
man.
Something, write you're a bunch of shitheads, 5 stars. Like, that's what we're really looking for.
I hope we get a bunch of reviews now that just say you're a bunch of shitheads, 5 stars.
That's what we're going for.
I almost want to make a ghost account just so I can do that review.
I want to see it. That should be our profile picture now. Oh my god.
Yeah. I want our enemies to give us as good of ratings as our friends. That's a victory for me. Or you could follow us on Twitter at @TheMidSide or on Facebook/TheMidSide. And frankly, the best thing you could do, not only for us, but for yourself, is to grab a friend, grab a family member, sit them down, have a nice glass of Mangria, and just listen together.
Can we share with a friend. Can we get our own drink to plug? Why do we always plug Mangria?
The Dangria.
Yeah, there you go.
You
should just at least say that.
As long as you're not drinking 1.3 liters of it, you're fine.
I'm Justin Nemlinski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, fuck Roger Goodell, take a step back, and witness the farce.
Have a day!
Fuck you, Roger.
Hate how these fucking iPhones work. I got a phone call. And so it was like, oh, well, clearly this phone call is more important than whatever the hell you're doing. When it's fucking not.